welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, crime stories. Later on, we hear Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, and Broadway Is My Beat. But right now, Dana Andrews, movie actor, portrays Matt Zavedic, and I Was a Communist for the FBI. This syndicated broadcast called Tight Wire first heard on May 25th, 1952.
I Was a Communist for the FBI. Starring Dana Andrews in an exciting tale of danger and espionage, I Was a Communist for the FBI. Many of the incidents in the story you are about to hear are based on the actual records and authentic experiences of Matt Zavedic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Zavedic.
I was in it for 9 long years, a member of the party. I lived with communists, worked with them, watched them. I learned their methods, their tricks, their plans, and their weaknesses. This is my story, the story of my life as a communist for the FBI.
Now, here is Dana Andrews as Matt Zavedic, FBI undercover man. This story from the confidential file is marked Tight Wire.
There's no 8-hour day for an undercover man, no 40-hour week. The working day is 24 hours. The week is 7 days long. It's not a job, it's a way of life, a tough way, and a dangerous one. You've got to be ready for anything, anytime. Play it tight, and you play it smart, or you're out of the game. And there's only one way out, the hard way. Whenever possible, you plan your schedule to contact the FBI. But they don't have a schedule, of course, so you never know when or how.
Taxi, mister?
No, thanks. I'm not going far.
Taxi's better than walking, though, Mr. Fisher.
Oh? Did you say Fisher?
Yeah. I was sure I recognized you, Mr. Fisher. Some buddies of mine are friends of yours. How about a ride?
Okay. I guess the taxi will save time.
Sure. Time and shoe leather. My name's Davis. Transferred last week from the FBI office in Chicago.
I see. Who are some of your buddies, Mr. Davis?
Richard, Balding, Blake. Barkley's the district inspector here. And...
okay, that's good enough. I was just checking.
Smart idea. You never know.
What's up, Davis?
Got a job for you, Matt. Maybe a rough one.
What kind of a job?
What's that meeting you told us about? The one for that big shot from the West Coast?
Yeah, Lazzo Carini.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the national coordinators. The meeting's Thursday evening. There'll be cell chairmen here from 10 states.
So there'll be names named, people, places, plans, so on. Matt, we've got to have all that verbatim.
Verbatim?
Yeah, a dictograph.
Dictograph? What about that new radio gimmick? That miniature transmitter?
We can't always be sure of it, Matt. We might hit a static problem, miss half the meeting. Now, here's what we want. Between now and Thursday evening, plant a microphone and wire the meeting hall.
That's all?
Yeah, I know. We're not giving you much time, but the job's got to be done, Matt. Go to it.
There it was. Wire the hall. It sounded simple, but I knew it was going to be one of the toughest jobs I'd ever done for the FBI. The party offices were on the same floor as the hall, and they'd be in use all week. Davis gave me 2 button microphones, 500 feet of bell wire, and his best wishes. It was all up to me. At 7 o'clock that evening, the cell leaders met to discuss the plans for the big meeting. I was present at the table. I had a plan of my own.
All right, comrades. Now, we're pretty well lined up on how to handle these delegates from out of town. I don't think there'll be more than 85. You agree, Comrade Mitch?
Carl Jones was cell chairman at the time.
Definitely, Comrade Jones. 85 is more than safe.
Greta Mapes, the local secretary, a transfer from Kansas City.
Then we'll plan accordingly. Now, is there anything else we have to work out?
Yes, there is, as a matter of fact. Let's talk about security measures. This meeting is big. Agents' names will be mentioned. Our future plans will be discussed. The FBI would love to get in on it.
True enough. But unless there's been some new development, I don't see why.
There has been a new development. Take a look.
What is it?
A piece of wire. Where did you get it, Comrade Fettig?
In the corridor, a few feet from the door of the hall.
Well, goodness.
It was caught between the edge of the rug and the baseboard. I saw it by sheer accident.
It's mic wire, all right. I'll bet on it.
And I'd say there's only one answer. The FBI has got in somehow.
Yeah, that was my idea.
Comrade Fettig, I'd like you to follow this up.
All right, comrade.
Go over the hall with a fine-tooth comb. Your job is to find that microphone. Go to it.
I'd played an outside chance. Had an approach right in the open, and it had worked. My orders from the FBI were to wire the hall, and my job for the commies was to find the FBI's wire, the same wire I was going to install myself. With a little luck, I might combine the two jobs. But luck was just what I didn't have.
Morning, Comrade Freddy.
Oh, Comrade Etheridge. What are you doing here?
Well, now, you don't act very glad to see me, man.
Well, no, it's not that, Ben. I'm surprised, that's all. Comrade Jones said I'd have the hall to myself today to look for that FBI wiring job.
Yeah, I know. I've been assigned to help you. You know, Matt, there's only one way the FBI could have wired this place.
How's that?
By having an agent planted in the cell.
Yeah. I thought of the same thing, Ben. I've been keeping my eyes open.
Any result?
No. Not yet, at least. Well, let's get to work.
Any time.
We'll start at one corner of the hall and go over it in a square yard at a time. Mm-hmm. Floor, wall, ceiling, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ben, let's go to work. Well, my bright idea was knocked right in the head. I'd planned to make the installation during my supposed search. But now, with Comrade Ben Etheridge breathing down my neck, I didn't have a chance. All I could do was go through the motions and try to figure some other angle. It was 4 p.m. when we finished our shakedown of the hall.
Well, I guess that's everything, Matt.
There ought to be another screwdriver.
Oh, yeah. Here it is. Well, what do you think?
You tell me. We covered every square foot and didn't find anything. I'd say the hall's clean.
What about that piece of mic wire, Matt?
I don't know. It got into the hall some way, but the FBI hasn't planted any microphone in here. I'll swear to it.
Well, I'll take your word for it, Matt.
My word for it? Look, Ben, are you assigned to help me or watch me?
Well, Sherman thought you kind of jumped at the job. A little of both, I guess.
So now, added to everything else, the chairman was suspicious. I'd wasted a day, and there was less than 2 more days to go. Dozens of names would be mentioned at the meeting, plans discussed, information the FBI needed badly. That hall had to be wired somewhere.
Richard speaking.
Fisher here. Bob Fisher.
Jack, go ahead.
Listen, that wire job's not going so good.
It's got to go. Washington really wants this one.
Yeah, I know. Look, I've got wax impressions of a couple of door keys. Took them right under my helper's nose this afternoon. How long will it take to get duplicates made?
30 minutes. What are they for?
The meeting hall and the alley door of the building. I'm going to slip in late tonight and string that wire. Look, I'm calling from the phone booth in the Gavin Hotel lobby. I leave the key impressions behind the coin box.
Jack, you'll pick them up in 10 minutes. Where do you want the keys delivered?
Leave them behind the cushions in the next to last booth in the hotel coffee shop. Anytime before 9.
Right. Watch yourself, boy.
You know it.
Good luck.
The keys were there when I went in at 9 o'clock that evening. I slipped them into my pocket, ordered and ate slowly, while I read a couple of papers. Timing was the one important thing. I knew that between 10:45 and 10:48, the watchman would be punching the clock on the 7th floor at the far end of the hall. And during those 3 minutes, I had to get in that alley door. The time was 10:47 when I slipped my key into the lock of the alley door. I closed the door behind me, hurried along the corridor, and began climbing the service stairs. I was almost to the 3rd floor when the switch was thrown up above me. And I heard the elevator coming down the shaft. I froze on the dark stairway and waited. Good. The night watchman was back on the 1st floor again, and the coast was clear. I climbed a few remaining steps, hurried along the 3rd floor corridor, and fitted my 2nd key in the lock of the meeting hall. Inside, I took the microphone buttons and the wire from my coat pocket and went to work. In 20 minutes, the job was done, inside the hall, that is. But the final connection in the shaft meant a few ticklish minutes swinging on an iron ladder over empty space. I used my knife blade to spring the catch on the shaft door, and I slid it open, stepped in on the ladder, and closed the door. I could see the top of the elevator 3 stories below me, and the height made me sick and dizzy. I worked quickly and had just finished the connection when the elevator started up. There was no space in the shaft for me and the elevator, and no time to get out the door. I did the only thing I could. As the elevator reached me, I stepped onto the top and clung to the cable. It kept going up. 6th floor. 7th. I could see the spinning drums winding the cable above me. Coming closer and closer. 8th floor. 1 more to go. The drums were right over my head. I threw myself flat on the top of the elevator. When we stopped, I had barely 18 inches clearance. When the watchman closed the doors and started back down the shaft, I clung to the iron ladder and stayed there until he reached the main floor. Then I fumbled at the catch on the shaft door, slid it open, and stepped out onto the 9th floor.
Okay, Matt. Don't move.
Ben, what are you doing here?
Waiting for an FBI stool pigeon. For you, Matt.
I don't know what you're
talking about. Get your hands up. This gun is loaded, Matt. 1 move and so help me, I'll kill you.
I stood there in the dim corridor in front of the elevator, staring at the gun in Ben's hand. 1 move and he'd kill me, he said. And I knew he would. Ben impressed people as being good-natured and easygoing, but underneath, he was a fanatic. I knew that, and I knew he meant what he'd said.
Matt, what are you doing here this time of night?
I'm just looking around, Ben. Checking up on things.
What things? What were you doing in the elevator shaft?
Look, comrade, maybe I've got a couple of questions of my own. What's your reason for being here?
A hunch, Matt. I got to thinking. So I came over, had the night watchman let me in.
I don't follow you. Got to thinking. What?
Oh, it'd be a smart idea for an FBI agent planted in the party to search the hall with a witness and then come back and put in a microphone after the search.
I'm afraid that's pretty weak, Ben.
Weak?
Yeah. I think we'd better talk to the chairman.
I'm way ahead of you, Matt. We're going downstairs to the party office. I'm going to phone him and have him come right over.
Okay.
And don't forget, Matt, the gun's still loaded.
Comrade Etheridge snapped on the lights in the party office and called Chairman Jones and told him what had happened. Then we sat and waited for Jones to arrive. I kept trying to think of some way out. One fortunate thing, I'd hidden the keys, the extra wire, and my tools on top of a girder in the elevator shaft. I was clean, and that was some advantage, but not much.
Well, you made a quick trip.
Sounded as though the situation called for it. Well, Comrade Svedek, seems we've been mistaken about you.
That depends on what you mean by mistaken.
Shut up! Get up, Svedek. How long have you been working for the FBI?
I haven't been, comrade. That's your mistake.
Mistake? Comrade Etheridge caught you right in the act tonight?
There are a couple of ways of looking at that. Look, Comrade Jones, you're the one in charge here, aren't you?
Of course.
Then why is Ben holding the gun?
Well, I wasn't trying to take over any authority.
Thanks. Feel better now, Svedek?
Yes. It was making me nervous having a gun pointed at me by an FBI agent.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
Ben, you claimed you came here tonight because you suspected me of planting a microphone in the hall. All right, where's the mic?
Well, I didn't have any chance to look for it, you know that.
But the mic was there this afternoon, Ben. Why didn't you find it then?
Huh?
What are you driving at, Svedek?
One of the sections of the hall Ben searched included the electric outlets next to the radiators. Did you take the cover plates off those outlets, Ben?
Well, no. They hadn't been tampered with in it.
One of them had. It's got a button mic planted in it.
What are you talking...
The wire runs behind the baseboard. I saw it this afternoon. How come you didn't?
Well, there wasn't any wire. That couldn't have been.
I don't see how you could have missed it. That's why I didn't say anything this afternoon, and that's why I came back tonight.
Wait a minute, Svedek. Maybe you wired the place tonight before Ben caught you.
How? As you said, Ben caught me. Search me now. I don't have any wire or tools. The hall is locked. I don't have a key to it.
That's another thing, Svedek. How did you get into the building?
That's the watchman. Watchman, that's a joke.
What do you mean?
The front door of the building was unlocked tonight, and the watchman was asleep in the lobby. I walked right in past him, and he didn't even move. Security. A microphone planted in the hall, and my so-called helper didn't even see it.
Now, take it easy, Comrade.
All right, so I'm mad, and I've got a right to be. The party's the biggest thing in my life. I'm giving my life to it. And when things happen like they have today, a helper who's either too stupid or too crooked to see a microphone when he stumbles over it,
and
a so-called watchman who goes off to sleep and leaves the door of the building wide open, of course I'm mad. Well, it worked. Temporarily, at least, I was off the hook as far as my party membership was concerned. But the last chance of getting that hall wired had gone right out the window. Davis, the FBI agent, agreed when I told him the story the next morning.
You went at it the right way, Matt. There's no question about that. You just had a run of bad luck, that's all.
Look, Davis, I've been thinking about this most of the night. I've got a halfway idea. It may sound crazy, but...
Let's have it. I haven't even got a halfway one.
Well, Richards was telling me a couple of months ago about that new miniature shortwave transmitter.
Yeah, but we only use that as a last resort, Matt.
This is a last resort. How big are they?
Oh, about the size of a couple packs of cigarettes. What do you got in mind?
It has a built-in mic, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, it's a complete unit. You just switch it on, and it's good for about 20 hours of continuous transmitting. Life of the batteries.
Davis, suppose one of those transmitters were planted in the hall. Could you pick it up?
Sure. They've got a radius of about 6 blocks. We could park a truck on the street as a mobile receiving unit. But can you do it, Matt?
With a little luck, I think I can. I arrived at the hall at 5 p.m. And I noticed that several baskets of flowers sent by the front organizations had already been delivered and placed on the speaker's table. The basket from my own group, the Pan-Slav Congress, wasn't there yet. Good. So far, the plan was working.
Matt.
Huh? Oh, hello, Ben.
I shouldn't have jumped at conclusions last night, Matt. When I found you here in the building, well, I thought sure.
Don't forget it. I was pretty rough on you, as far as that's concerned.
No, I just followed up. I don't know how I could have missed that mic.
It's a matter of training. I remembered later that you said you'd never had...
Matt!
Yeah, Carl?
There's some guy here from the garden florist. Says he's got a flower order for you.
Oh, yeah. It's a bouquet for the speaker's table for the Pan-Slav Congress. I'll take care of it. Thanks.
You the fellow that ordered the flowers?
That's right. Thanks.
Just sign here, please.
All right.
Transmitter's in the basket. Already turned on.
Fine. Good luck.
Thanks, Richard.
There you are.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Well, Well, now, you went pretty elaborate on it, didn't you, Matt?
4 dozen roses. Comrade Carini is an important man, Greta. Only the best.
They smell wonderful. Those must have been specially selected.
That's right. They were. Well, the transmitter was in the meeting hall and right on the speaker's table. It was already turned on, Richard said. And parked down the block somewhere was a panel delivery truck with a tape recorder and a pair of stenographers with headphones, taking down every word. My job was over. There was nothing to do but wait.
Matt, is that microphone you found still hooked up?
Yeah, Comrade Jones decided we wouldn't disconnect it until just before the meeting. That way, the FBI wouldn't try to plant another one.
Good idea. Catch them flat-footed. Wonder how they got in to install it.
Well, with that watchman not paying attention to his... Oh, this must be Comrade Carini.
I guess so. Carl's bringing him over.
Comrade Carini, Comrade Felix.
Comrade.
Comrade. And Comrade Etheridge. What? Who's this? Why, they're flowers sent by the various organizations in honor of...
I am sorry.
What?
The honor I appreciate. But the flowers must go. I have the allergy, you understand. The hay fever. I am unable to...
Oh, I'm sorry, comrade. I had no idea. Well, we'll have it placed outside in the corridor.
Yeah.
Matt, would you...
Oh, yeah, sure. Ben, you grab a couple of these baskets. I'll take these at the end.
I wish to cause no offense.
Oh, that's all right, comrade. It's quite all right.
Quite all right. As far as I'm concerned, it was quite all wrong. In a few minutes, the meeting would start and the FBI wouldn't be in on it. Ben and I carried the flowers out and set them along the corridor. And suddenly I decided to take one last chance. Ben's back was turned. Quickly, I reached into the flower basket, fished out the transmitter, and dropped it into my inside coat pocket.
Comrades! Comrades! Before I open this meeting, I wish to inform you that the FBI has managed to establish a beachhead in our very midst. Comrade Fenwick?
Yes, comrade?
Take care of the matter?
Of course. There you are.
You see, comrade, a microphone.
Right here.
The FBI will be most disappointed. And now I wish to present our national coordinator from West Coast headquarters, Comrade Lepso Corini.
I sat through the meeting while name after name was mentioned, plan after plan discussed. The transmitter sagged my coat pocket, pressed against my chest. I was conscious of it every second, and conscious, too, of what would happen if the commies knew I had it. The only thing I didn't know, was it working all right? Was the stuff going through? Was the FBI getting it? I found out around midnight when I put through a call from the public phone booth.
Richard speaking.
Fisher here, Bob Fisher.
Yes, nice work.
Everything come through all right?
Perfect. We got every word from start to finish.
Good.
One thing we couldn't figure, though. Who was beating that drum?
Drum?
Yeah, it kept up all through the meeting. Sounded like a funeral march.
Well, there wasn't any drum that I... Hey, wait a second. I had the transmitter in the inside pocket of my coat, Richard. That drum beating was my heart. I left the phone booth and walked along the street. It was after midnight, and the city had gone to bed. And I could hear my footsteps echoing against the dark fronts of the buildings. An hour before, I sat in a hall with 100 people, supposedly my friends, my comrades. And now I'm alone. But I was alone then, too. Because they aren't my comrades. And I have no friends. That's how it is with me. I'm a communist for the FBI. I walk alone. This is Dana Andrews with a word about the story you just heard.
In this story, as in all those we bring you, names, dates, places, and events have been changed to protect innocent persons. But nonetheless, many of these stories are based on actual facts, on true incidents, as experienced and reported by Matt Savetic during his 9 fantastic years as an undercover man for the FBI. Next week, another exciting adventure from Matt Savetic's official record. Join us, won't you?
I Was a Communist for the FBI, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 25th, 1952, a syndicated broadcast. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now, time for Broadway Is My Beat, one of the earliest broadcasts from the series, from March 27th, 1949 on CBS. An interesting program, as it was on the air from 1949 through 1954, producing well over 200 episodes for the Columbia Broadcasting System, and one of the programs to have the distinction of more than one sound man. According to director and producer Elliot Lewis, it took 3 to capture the sounds of New York, even the people. Larry Thor, former announcer for Suspense, is the star as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway's My Beat. From Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway's My Beat. With Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. Broadway, it's a jagged dream of concrete and steel and twisted faces, where the vision of beauty stands in a doorway at the end of night. You go looking for it, and you're stopped by a guy selling the latest postcard or a sightseeing tour through Joyland. And you keep looking. Then the same guy stops you and lays you out. You'll never make it. You never do. It's Broadway, My Beat. A cop doesn't have to go looking for death. They call you in on it. My call was a greasy brownstone building that crouched on maybe half a block where Harlem reaches up for Central Park. Its walls were covered with withered ivy, and its windows were barred with iron, not withered. On a soot-covered sign, you could make out a restful-sounding name. Primrose Sanitarium, rest home for what you couldn't make out. And then a door was unlocked. And a man stood in front of you in a starched white jacket, with his hands folded like ice tongs that hung from his narrow shoulders.
It's after visiting hours, chum.
I was invited. Danny Clover, Broadway Special Detail.
Oh, we've been waiting for you. Waiting with bated breath, chum. Come on in, chum.
You're the friendly type, huh?
Oh, yes. All the chums in our little institution find me gentle and friendly. Right down this hall.
The chums? Who are they?
Sick people. Lost people. You know how it is.
Do I?
Of course you do. You're a policeman. That settles it.
And you? What are you?
Male nurse named Horace Vesper. Assistant to physician Ellery. Him and me, we're the administering angels of Primrose Sanitarium.
Angels?
Mm-hmm, chum. Here we are.
Who is it, Horace? One of the patients giving us trouble?
No, physician. They're all asleep like suckling babes. This is the detective who answered the call we made.
Oh. How do you do, sir? I'm Dr. William Ellery. I see you're astonished at the state my laboratory's in. But we've had a disorder here, as you see. A bourbon, sir?
On the phone, you said a man was dead. Where is he?
Oh, there on my operating table. Show the detective, Horace.
Sure, physician. Over here, chum. See how it is, Mr. Clover?
Yeah. Who was he? One of your patients?
Innocent.
You can talk plainer than that.
I don't think I can. You tell him about it, Horace.
Sure, physician. It was like this, chum. We found this man on our doorstep. He was...
One of the lost people?
You're quick, chum. No. This one was bleeding from a knife wound, but lots of blood. Stabbed. So I lifted him in my arms like he was a foundling babe, and I brought him here to the physician. We gave him a transfusion.
Yeah, indeed. Only thing I could do. He'd lost too much blood already. He was dying. I haven't practiced surgery for many years, Mr. Clover, but I think my old professors would have been proud of me.
Who was he?
That's your problem, chum. There was no identification on him. Not a thing. This one was one of the anonymous chums.
And so the tedious routine of why an anonymous man died began. And it's easy to be anonymous in New York. All you have to do is like cheesecake, shove on subways, stare on windy street corners, and wish you were in Miami. You're one of the crowd, worth two dimes a day to the BMT. Nobody bothers about you. But if you want someone to bother about you, there's another way. You can be found dead. Then you're an important guy. New York demands to know who you are, and you become the star attraction the next morning in the morgue. Me? I represent the police department, and I'm your custodian. I exhibit you.
I'm afraid to look, Lieutenant.
You'll have to, ma'am. Okay, Dudley.
Yeah, Danny.
Well, ma'am?
Poor man.
Your father?
No, he's not my father.
Thank you. Would you tell the next lady to come in?
Yes.
You know, Danny, a policeman's got to protect life and property, but...
This man is property, Tartaglia. Somebody's.
Yeah, I know.
What did you find on Dr. Ellery?
Well, so far, legitimate. License, everything.
Oh, another one, Danny.
Yeah. This way, ma'am.
I'm Mrs. Bullock. Mrs. Eugene Bullock. I just thought...
Tartaglia.
Yeah.
I just thought, well, he didn't come home. Mr. Bullock didn't for a whole night... He's never done that before. Never.
Attack me of water.
Here, Mrs. Bullock, drink this.
Thank you. Since today is our 25th anniversary, I thought... I knew Mr. Bullock wouldn't want to miss that. This was our first trip to New York, you see. Yesterday, he left the hotel... Mr. Bullock had an appointment at 7. I've always liked pearls, and he was going to get me a necklace. Surprise. I didn't let on, but I knew about it.
The appointment? With whom?
He had the money with him, and he was going to see Mr. Branch. Mr. Eben Branch.
Eben Branch. Got that, Tartaglia?
Yeah.
I didn't want to ruin Mr. Bullock's place. I knew what it meant to him.
There wasn't much more she had to tell us after that. Then she asked to be left alone with her husband. I planted Tartaglia in the shadows and got out of there. The New York telephone directory is a jewel, a dream, a work of art. It gave me Eben Branch's business, traitor. His address, 12 Gramercy Park South, and his telephone number. What I needed, I couldn't get by dialing, so I called on Eben Branch, trader, 12 Gramercy Park South.
From the police, eh? Veil yourself from a bamboo fan, my boy. The rain is making it more humid, I think.
The place of Eben Branch was a fragment torn out of a tropical paradise and enclosed in double-paneled glass. Even to the white cargo-type rain pouring down in the space between the glass walls from a contraption bearing the seal of approval of the New York City engineers... Tropical birds played tropical games and sang sad songs in huge cages of gilded bamboo. And sitting in a fan-shaped wicker chair was Eben Branch, wearing yellowed linen, his hands touching the head of a girl, a silent girl in a jade sarong who strummed a tropical-type guitar.
You'll find it pleasant here, Mr. Clover, far from the terrors of that jungle out there. You'll stay for a bit?
I may never leave.
Splendid. You're a man of quality, sir. I knew it the moment I saw you. I said as much to the girl here. Didn't I, girl? And now what can I do for you, sir?
You could wake me up.
Oh, it's no dream, Mr. Clover. All this was bought at a good price. A few souls, a few deaths, and a fantastic hoard of pearls. The South Seas, veritable paradise, boy, veritable.
Wouldn't it have been simpler to leave paradise where it belonged? I only ask because I wouldn't know.
You mean go back?
Uh-huh.
Impossible.
Oh?
Of course, impossible. The moment I set foot on that island, Nirvana, I should be gutted by the native I stole the pearls from. Needn't concern you, Mr. Clover. That was 30 years ago, not your domain.
What concerns me is a man named Eugene Bullock.
Eugene Bullock. Do you know where he is?
I asked you first.
Well, Mr. Simpleton had an appointment with me last night at midnight.
Midnight? His wife said he was to meet you at 7.
Men lie to their wives. As I say, Mr. Clover, midnight is the hour at which I find myself most amenable to the conduct of business. Till then, I have other matters.
In the phone book, it says you're a trader. Is that a business?
Trader? It's a word I use to make me glamorous and unreal.
Hmm?
Term I insert my advertising matter to attract suckers. I sell pearls, Mr. Clover, for cash.
I see.
Only cash. Mr. Bullock wanted pearls. I was prepared to sell him $5,000 worth. That's the tragedy, Mr. Clover. Simpleton, $5,000 desperately. Paradise, Mr. Clover.
And so, sun sank slow west, I bade farewell to the land of palmettos and exile beach boys. If what Branch had told me was true, the pattern of life needed completing. His last 5 hours of living. What happened to Mr. Bullock between 7 and midnight? People had died during those hours, but why Mr. Bullock? And as an extra added question, what happened to the $5,000 he had on his person? By the time I got back to headquarters, the description of Mr. Eugene Bullock had been circulated all over the area. What do you need?
I think I got
some pictures taken downstairs, Marty. Here. Look. That him?
Huh? Looks calmer, but yeah, that's him. Last night, he looked more excited.
Like how?
Like so. He gets in a cab and he says, cruise around. I cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Through the rearview mirror, I see he's got the same expression like a kid writing with chalk on a wall, you know? So I asked the question and he says, yeah.
Where'd you take him?
Oh, first to the village and a spot I know in Chinatown, places like that. Nothing suits this guy, nothing. Then we hit a dime a dance dive off 105th Street. This he goes wild about. He loves it. He pays me and he leaves. Is that what you want, Danny?
No, whatever it is, no. If that's how we say no in Spanish.
Por favor.
Look, who's around here? I can tell I'm from the police.
Adios.
You're about the word police, señorita.
Get away. Get away from me.
Oh, now it's in English, huh? You learn fast. Let's go, señorita. Let's go where we can put back ground near the police. You tried, friend. You really did. What do you know? Man gets knocked down in a fight, nobody pays any attention. This what happened last night, Rosa? This what happened last night?
Music happened last night with maracas, Latin music.
When we were interrupted, I was saying, let's go. Let's go.
Wait.
All right.
Last night I was dancing with a sailor. A pretty
man died.
Oh, bad. Somebody sees blood, somebody screams. Everybody runs out. There's even the pretty sailor boy. Stabbed, but not dead.
Then what?
Sanchez helped me to lift him to my automobile. I drove him a little way to a sanitarium where there's a doctor. I left him.
Why did you take the trouble? Why didn't you run, too?
I felt sorry for the little man lying there.
Oh? How about $5,000, Rosa? The little man had that much with him when he came here. He didn't have it later.
Senor, I have never seen $5,000 in my life.
Is that the truth, Rosa?
Es verdad. The truth. But you want me anyhow, don't you? I am arrested, yes?
She was arrested, yes. And booked, yes. And Sanchez, her admirer, see, also. It was simple and it was fast. I had the victim, the motive, and two grade A suspects. I told the boys in the press room the solution of the murder of Eugene Bullock was only a matter of hours. Simple routine, I told them. I've never been so wrong in all my life. Broadway is the name of a street, and it's a world apart. It's a world that explodes every 24 hours, then starts all over again. The faces might be different, but the expressions are the same. A current population and a current crime to consider, and I'd promised them a killer. The killer of Eugene Bullock, an alien from Iowa. But I wasn't keeping my word. Grade A suspect Rosa was being uncooperative. She said she didn't have anything to do with the killer. Somebody else at the dance hall must have done it. So I gave her a chance to tell me who. The chance was the police lineup.
Well, they're ready out there, Danny. 12 guys who could have been at the dance hall at the time of the stabbing.
Thanks, Tartaglia. This is what we call a police lineup, Rosa. The lights are so arranged that we can see those 12 men and they can't see us. You can say what you like and the men won't know who's speaking.
I see. Yes.
Now, I want you to pick out the men you recognize. The men who were in the dance hall night before last. Go ahead.
That one, Lieutenant. The tall man on the end.
Well, that's Audie Westfall, Danny. Gets his name on the blotter like clockwork.
Who else, Rosa?
The one in the brown sweater with the eyeglasses.
Who else?
That one.
You mean the one holding the cap?
Oh, yes, that one too, but I mean the one next to him.
Go ahead.
That one and that one. Yes, I'm sure of it.
Keep going.
The man without hair and with the mustache.
You remember him?
I danced with him. He wanted to meet me later.
Okay, Tartaglia. Let him go. All of them. Tell him to go home.
Yeah, Danny, sure.
So take Rosa back to the matron and lock her up again.
Well, Senor, what are you doing? I don't understand.
And I'll explain. You're lying. You're covering up for someone. The last man you pointed out, the Baldy, who danced with you. He was planted in the lineup. He's a cop. Take her away, Tartaglia. Maybe your boyfriend's got a better memory. Thanks, officer. I'll call you when I'm through. Cigarette, Sanchez?
No. No from you.
Here's a pack. Keep them. They're yours.
By what right you hold me here? By what right, huh?
A man was murdered. That gives us rights. Him and me.
You're crazy, insane. I kill no one, police, stupid.
You're a man of honor. You love Rosa. It degrades you if anyone manhandles her.
I would kill him.
That's what I say. You killed Eugene Bullock because he made passes at Rosa.
Between a wish and the act, police, there is great space.
You stabbed him, and then you got a bonus, a $5,000 bonus, and that healed your wounded honor.
You are only trying, police. I know guys like that, always trying. We have a word for them in Spanish.
Be polite, Sanchez. It's easier when you're polite.
What have you done to Rosa?
I wondered how long before you'd ask me that.
What have you done to Rosa?
If we had to. She confessed to the murder of Eugene Bullock.
You lie. Your mouth lies.
She confessed, Sanchez.
She only does it to protect me. I stab him. I stab him.
Tell me about it.
What like you say? This Bullock, he put hands on Rosa. His old hands on Rosa's body. This happened many times with Rosa. The hands of an old man.
Yeah. The $5,000, where is it?
Oh, leave me alone, please. Leave me alone.
All right, Sanchez. I'll get a stenographer.
Did he confess, Danny?
Yeah. What do you want, Tartaglia?
Oh, I thought you'd want to know about this, Danny. They fished Horace Vesper out of the lake in Central Park.
When?
About an hour ago. Hey, Danny, getting Sanchez to confess, that could mean a promotion.
To what, Tartaglia? To oblivion? You have it in the palm of your hand, sewn up clean and neat, and it slips away because a man named Horace Vesper was found dead in a lake. That changes it. You shudder at the fatal mistake you almost made. You shudder. By that time, you're pushing your way through a crowd whose eyes are vacant and unblinking. And it's the same crowd you always see in attendance at a public dying. The setting was nice, though. Central Park never looked better. The leaves turning to gold, the sun shimmering on the lake. Ducks fat and happy. The dashing blue uniform of New York's finest. And the lump of a man lying gray and sodden on the bank.
That's him, Danny. Some kid in a rowboat saw him down in the water. That's how we happened to...
No marks of violence on him, I think.
No, Danny. This guy must have been one of them health addicts. He goes in the water without no shirt on. I figured the guy goes in for a dip because, like I say, with him, health is a thing. And the shock of the cold water surprises him and stops his heart from beating.
That's how you figured it.
Yeah. Adds up, don't it?
I'm thrilled.
Yeah. Here is the deceased effects, Danny. Driver's license made out to Horace Vesper, Primrose Sanitarium. Blue Shield medical card, a wallet with no dough. But plenty pictures of his Navy buddies.
How do you figure buddies?
Yeah, this was a bit of detective work, Danny. See this watch fob?
Yeah, but tell me about it anyway.
It's a cleverly contrived watch fob, contrived from one of Horace Vesper's Navy dog tags. That's how I figure the guys in the pictures are his buddies.
Let's see it.
Sure, Danny, here. Cleverly contrived, huh? With my dog tags, I did something different. Well,
Danny, you figure it like I figure it?
No, I don't figure it like you figure.
How you figure?
I figure like murder.
Huh?
Yeah, huh. Only I got like to prove it.
Hi, Danny. Come on in.
Thanks, Maria. How's the darling of the police laboratory? Everything okay? Need some new Bunsen burners and things? Tell Danny about it. I'll fix it.
How about just walking on little cat's feet, huh, Danny?
Am I interrupting something?
Well, Dr. Sinsky over there is working on something important, an experiment that can't stand a sudden jolt.
Yeah? What is it?
It's lunch. Cheese souffle.
Oh. Well, then just tell me what your brains and equipment turned up on Horace Vesper, and I'll tiptoe out of here.
Well, we ran a Marsh test.
Huh?
In outline, Danny. No signs of poison. A sedative, yes, but a mild one. Nothing lethal.
Was he drowned?
Not that either, Danny. No trace of water in the pleura. Sorry, in the lungs. He didn't drown.
No, I didn't think he did. What else, Maria?
Well, there are two punctures. One on each arm, made by a large type needle. The type they use for transfusions, I'd say.
Yeah. What else?
Look in the microscope, Danny. The one right there.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Well, not exactly. All I see is somebody looking back at me.
That's your eyeball, Danny. Adjust it. Here, let me.
Now I'm winking at myself.
I'll tell you about it. And you won't believe it.
I'll believe it. Tell me.
Horace Vesper's Navy dog tag has made a liar out of science.
Get off the dime, Maria. What are you trying to say?
It's obvious what I'm trying to say. Horace's dog tag says he had type A blood. The microscope shows something else.
Like what?
In the specimen I've examined of his blood, there are too many clots. Both A and B cells have agglutinized.
Come on, come on.
Mr. Vesper's blood has been tampered with. Now it's both type A and B. Strange, isn't it?
I didn't answer Maria because everybody knows there'll always be a new way, a strange way to kill a man. Instead, I went back to Primrose Sanitarium. Its door stood open, so I walked in. I found the hallway that led to the laboratory and felt my way along it in the darkness. And that's what I got. Darkness.
I didn't expect you to awaken so soon, Lieutenant.
My side.
It's a mess, all right.
Yeah?
You see, Lieutenant, I hold myself personally accountable for what happened. One of the patients somehow got into my office and somehow got into my desk.
And somehow got your gun and somehow shot me. Why?
His protest against the world, I suppose. The kind of world he's made for himself. Anyone outside of it is an enemy.
Now you're going to keep things locked up, huh?
I'll see to it. But it's Horace's job. He should know better.
Horace...
Now lie still, Lieutenant. You've lost a lot of blood. You're weak.
I am. Looks like a flesh wound to me.
It's worse than that. You'll be better, though. After you've had a transfusion and some rest. A whole lot of rest.
I'm weak, huh? I can sit up. See, it hurts. I can do it.
Oh, don't be a fool, Lieutenant. Lie down. You'll only aggravate your condition.
Yeah? We mustn't aggravate conditions.
The transfusion, Lieutenant. It won't hurt a bit. We'll just jab your arm with alcohol. And now, I'll get these things ready.
My blood type's A, Doctor.
Yes, I know. I ran a test on it while you were asleep.
We mustn't make a mistake. Give me a transfusion of type B blood, because that wouldn't make me well. That would kill me, the way it killed Mr. Bullock.
I beg your pardon?
You didn't give Bullock a transfusion to save his life. You gave him a transfusion to kill him.
Oh, poor fellow. Delirious.
You killed Horace, too. Sedative in his bourbon, I figured. Then you gave him a transfusion of B blood while you took A blood out of him. Cute. You want it all, Mr. Bullock's funny yourself. That was
greedy, Doctor.
Now, Lieutenant.
Remember your Hippocratic oath, Doctor.
You need that transfusion, Lieutenant.
Put down that needle.
You're delirious. You have to be quiet.
Put down that needle.
You have got to be quiet.
Here's some quieting for you. You just rest right there, Doctor. That's the way it ended, the part of it that I knew about. I had to be told the rest. That the police found the doctor in the corner of the laboratory gibbering to a bottle of bourbon. That I fought them all the way to the emergency ward, and that nobody in medical history protested the way I did. All they wanted to do, they said, was give me a transfusion. Broadway now. It's night. The street is tearing itself apart. It's drinks in the house and have another one, Joe. And hey, mister, I can really show you the sights. The frenzy and the big noise. Mostly it's the big noise. Otherwise you'd hear the heartbreak. Because it's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My feet.
Broadway is my beat. I'm tuned to Yesterday from March 27th, 1949 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.